Welcome to Tell Us Something Radio. During the next hour, you'll hear stories that include a man recovering from a bad case of dysentery while traveling in Asia, an anti-war college student seeing humanity in a soldier's eyes, a traffic stop gone wrong, a young woman falling out of her boat on the Laxaw River, and a life-saving happenstance. I'm Mark Moss, creator of Tell Us Something, a series of live storytelling events that began in 2011. Over the years, our audience has grown large because most people love hearing a good story. After all, stories are what make us human. The people who get on the stage at Tell Us Something events are generally not performers, and most of them don't write out their stories or memorize every word. Nothing's perfect, but it's real. I think you'll enjoy what you're about to hear. We'll begin with Reed Reimers. His story was recorded in front of a live audience on May 29th, 2012, at the Top Hat Lounge in Missoula. The theme for the night was, I Got Lucky. Reed is a tall guy traveling in Asia who was dragged into a dangerous neighborhood after recovering from a bad case of dysentery. He calls his story, Boiled Bat Wings, or I'm Big in Asia.
In case you can't notice, I'm a fairly tall guy. Not super tall by like Anglo-European standards, but at 6'6", you know, I tend to be fairly tall here. You don't notice it as much if you travel to Europe. You know, there's a lot of tall people in Germany and all those kind of places. Italy is a little squant overall. But otherwise, it's just usually not a problem. It wasn't necessarily even a problem when I spent about 2.5 months in Southeast Asia. Had that amount of time to get from Bangkok all the way over to Ho Chi Minh City and didn't really have a plan, just kind of went with it. I was traveling with a tall German guy, about 6'4". I'd met in New Zealand years beforehand. And he was really into rockabilly. So we had like the long, swooped, like coiffed hair. He put like pomade in his hair every morning. And so we were kind of a sight to see, these two kind of like towering Westerners going through Asia. But it was absolutely fantastic. I had a great time tooling around Thailand. And our last night in Thailand, we were staying at this little family-run place near a national park in eastern Thailand. And the little owner gal named Seema, she was cute as a button, and she just loved me. She just thought it was the cutest thing in the world. And I mean, the first thing I did is I walked in there, I hit my head on her door frame, which was just kind of standard. I had these like bloody scabs across my poor little bald head the entire time I was in Asia, and they never really healed up. They just got more and more of them. It was beautiful. It's like a Rorschach when it was all done. It was fantastic. And so she'd always tell me, oh, you're too big for Asia. You're too big. And then she'd poke me in the chest. And I don't know what the deal is, but I think they just assume if you're that much bigger than them, then of course they couldn't hurt you. But those are some tough little ladies over there. And so I'd have these bruises on my chest and scabs on my head and feet hanging off the bed and shower heads spraying at like my belly button. And it was just Asia, you know, it was the fun of it. And but we were leaving there that morning, and she was just a sweetheart. And she came to me, and she grabbed my hand and pulled me down so she could kind of talk to me very seriously. So we're down here, and she's talking to me. And she says, you be careful in Cambodia. Okay, Cambodia is not Thailand. It's not the land of smiles. It's not safe, especially for you. And she kind of glanced over the big German guy who's standing there with his coif, standing out like a sore thumb. And so, you know, I said, thanks. And she said, don't go anywhere alone and don't go anywhere at night. And I said, no problem, Seema, it's great. Gave her a little hug, gave her the way. You know, I was so international. And so we get there. And of course, that morning I wake up with massive bowel problems because I'm a white boy from Montana and I'm traveling through Southeast Asia. And so I'm having to hit the bathroom as often as possible on this trip, which of course, when you're in that kind of situation, the last thing you want to do is get on like a 12-hour bus ride. But I did. I made it all the way to the border, thank God. And then I got out, and their bathroom, I got used to the squat toilets. That wasn't really the problem. But this is like a kind of a porta potty style squat toilet. And there just wasn't room to bend down. Like my knee, like my femur is too long to get the right angle. Of course, I'm having all these troubles. And so that was an experience in and of itself. But nothing like crossing the border into Cambodia was. I mean, you literally go from these cute little farmhouses and all this wonderful stuff, nice paved roads, everything, pretty good infrastructure, into like 100 years ago. I mean, you're talking unpaved roads, like 7-story tall brothels and casinos. And you see the effects of war there so prevalently, all these people missing limbs on the street. And it's just kind of a big hot mess, to be honest, and hot especially. I'm a big hairy Montana guy, and so to be in the tropics in that kind of heat, in that kind of like stomach condition, just feeling horrible. And so we make it through, and it was fine. We had to try to find a ride down Phnom Penh. But by that point, like, all the stuff was gone. All the buses and things were gone. So we finally finagle this ride with this. I'm pushing off prostitutes and finagling this ride with this guy. And we finally get in. He takes us to a town called Battambang, which is a pretty big city, but there's nothing really there. It's not really a tourist town. So we end up getting there, get dumped at this trashy little hotel. And we go upstairs, and of course we stay on the top floor because there's no elevator, so it's cheapest on the top floor because I'm a cheap bastard. And so we go up and dump our things, and Stefan the German just passes right out. He was done. He had like the long day. I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I need some water. I don't know if I've drank water all day, and I've just been sweating and shitting all day. Like, I need some stinking water, and it's like a life or death situation at this point. And I look out the window, and I see the lights of this convenience store. And it only looks about maybe like 4 or 5 blocks away. And I'm like, I can do that. I can make that. I mapped it out in my head. I saw the little street. You know, it's all those weird little alleys that they always show in movies, you know, that look all exotic. They are. And they smell bad. I like them. Don't get me wrong. So I like kind of mapped it out in my head. And Stefan's not moving. And I was like, I'll be fine. I'm just going to the store. You know, I like run down to the holiday gas station. You know, no big deal. And so I get out on the street. And all of a sudden, the door closes behind me. And I realize I don't have my key, first of all. So I'm kind of stuck out on the street in Battambang, Cambodia, which is an adventure in and of itself. But I was like, I'll be fine. I'll figure it out when I get back. No big deal. So I start wandering kind of down these alleyways, and they start twisting and turning in ways I did not expect at all. And there's no street lights, and there's stray dogs that are glaring at me, and there's faces in windows that are glaring at me, and everybody's just glaring. It's a very glaring day in Battambang. And so... but I come around this corner, I hear all this loud music, and this garage door is kind of open, and there's these people kind of like, clearly kind of having a party. Not really laughing kind of party, but there's some loud music and people kind of shouting and such. And as I go by, it's literally like somebody scratched the needle off the record. And I look over, and there are like 12 angry little Cambodian men just glaring at me. I was like, oh, shit. This is what Seema warned me about. Like, oh. But of course, you know, I've traveled quite a bit, so I put on my, like, I know where I'm going. I'm from here. Oh, you didn't know? I grew up down the street. What are you talking about? Where I, like, walk along, like, I pretend, like, exactly. You know, I belong here. What are you talking about? It just keeps running that over in my head as if it would ever help. So I'm maybe, like, half block away from this thing, and I cross the street, and I get this grab on my arm. And not just, like, excuse me, sir, tap, like, a grab. And I look down, and the guy's not looking at me. He just starts dragging me back toward this party full of people. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, this is how bad stories start. Like, some stupid American goes wandering at night in this dangerous part of this dangerous city in this dangerous country. And I was like, oh, shit. So my mom would not be proud of me right now. And I thought, well, maybe I could take him. You know, I'm kind of big. I've never been in a fight before, but I'm sure I could take this little guy. And then, of course, all my weird Western, like, stereotypes come up, and I'm like, they probably all know, like, martial arts. And they'll be able to kick my ass right away. And if I did run away, I don't know where I'm going. And, you know, I'd probably just get lost, and then they'd all get me. And so I just kind of went with him and get drugged back to this thing. And I'm standing there, and he pulls me up in front of the group, and by this point, all the guys have kind of come out, and they're all standing in this semicircle, just glowering faces at me, and I was like, oh, shit. And he pulls my arm up like this, and I was like, great, he's going to stab me in the lung, and then they're going to, like, chop me up and put me in noodles tomorrow, because that's what they do in these crazy foreign countries. And he pulls my arm out, and he stands right about here, and then he starts jumping up and down so that his little head was hitting my elbow. And the guys bust up laughing. It was the first smile I saw the whole night. And they're tittering like little girls. Like, it's the funniest thing they've ever seen in their lives. And each one of them comes up separately and tries it and jumps up into my elbow. And they're all, like, laughing. And they just think it's the greatest thing. And one of the guys, the biggest guy, he could kind of brush his head on my elbow. So he felt, like, really cool. He was, like, the cool one of the night. They end up dragging, like physically dragging me back in, with lots of chest pokes too. They were all about that. Smiles and chest pokes, they were all about it. Drag me back into this garage, and they start just handing me these little shot glasses of like Mekong whiskey, which is bad, bad business. And then this like fermented banana wine stuff that is just horrific. And keeping in mind, I was willing to risk my life just for some like potable water at this point. And I'm slamming this stuff, and they get really excited, and they start talking to each other, and they get giddy. And then one of them disappears into the back of the garage, and they come out maybe a few minutes later with this like literally Yoda-sized gal. She was like tiny and all shriveled and just cute as something really cute, for example. And she comes up to me and she pulls me down to her and she pats my little face, pokes me in the chest, and then heads out. And like 20 minutes later, she comes back with this huge plate of food. So these guys are like, they're starting to feed me stuff on the end of chopsticks, and they're giving me, you know, some bits of pork and some noodles. And then they hand me this thing that is essentially nothing but gristle and bone and tendon. There's no meat involved in it. And I'm trying to chew it, and I'm getting nauseous, and I'm just like, oh, God, blah. And the little mom is just, like, staring at me, like, smiling, like, nodding her head. And they show me, they pull it out, and it's a boiled bat wing. Which, as I see that, I nearly get more nauseous, and then I start chewing, and I hit the little claw bone hand thing, which makes an audible crack inside my mouth, which, of course, makes them all bust up laughing. Because, of course, everybody knows you bite the little hand off before you start eating the boiled bat wing. So I'm sitting there literally on the verge of just puking all over the place. And I thanked them. I gave my ways all the way around and kind of started to flee and ended up wandering back to my hotel and puking in the alley for a while and finally waited till they opened up the next morning as I was sitting on the stoop. But it was one of the strangest things because I guess I expected such exotic strangeness in Asia. And I certainly found it in a lot of different ways. But what it came down to, I think, where I felt really lucky, A, just not being in a bowl of noodles right now, was also just that folks are folk. I mean, I realized that Cambodians don't naturally smile a lot, but if you smile and wave, they wave right back. And so I was like the stinking queen of England, just walking down the streets, ever just smiling and waving at people, and they're all smiling and waving back, and people would go up and like, give me a baby. And I would just kind of hold it, and then they would take the baby back and just walk away. And it was just a wonderful experience overall, but I think I just learned that, you know, you can't ever kind of fall back on expectations. And warnings are good, and being safe is good. But more importantly, you kind of just have to, like, trust, and a little smile, a little wave can get you a long way. So thank you very much.
Reed Reimers is a Missoula native who graduated with a master's in theater from the University of Montana. In the last 10 years, he has been an expressive arts educator, working with thousands of kids across the country, and has acted in dozens of local productions. A self-proclaimed Montucky vagabond, Reed has traveled extensively overseas on small-budget independent trips, often finding adventures and insights in the most unlikely of places. Our next story comes to us from Christy Hager. It was recorded on October 9, 2012, at the Top Hat Lounge in Missoula in front of a live audience. The theme was forgiveness. Christy, a peacenik en route to visit her family at Christmas, encounters a Vietnam vet with a broken leg. She doesn't know what to say to him, which starts her on a journey of understanding and self-forgiveness. Christy calls her story 11-11-11.
I was impressed with the number of people who got in line at last year's Veterans Day gathering to take their turn at saying something specific and personal out loud in public. How does that work? Well, they felt safe enough to accept the Master of Ceremonies' invitation to pick a flower from the buckets that were around, place it on the ground in front of the podium, and say whatever they wanted to into the microphone. I watched, I listened, and I hesitated. And then I picked out a white carnation and joined them. Big, deep, endless tears felt good. And I managed to place the flower and then say what I needed to say. A reporter caught up with me as I was pulling myself together at the edge of the courthouse lawn. And she asked, "Who are you honoring today?" Well, that, you know, post-meltdown buzz was helping me out by then. And so I answered painlessly, I don't know his name, but he's haunted me for over 40 years. Well, she looked curious, but she didn't follow that lead. But I had to. I followed it down a haunted rabbit hole that led me to West Philadelphia in the spring of 1968. I'm in my last semester of college in the city of Brotherly Love, so named by William Penn and his fellow nonviolent Quakers. We are the Quakers, as in go Quakers. And the anti-war riots are really heating up on campuses, including mine. And in April, Martin Luther King is assassinated. It's really tense for days. I lay low after neighborhood kids throw rocks at me. In May, Columbia University is under siege. Students are on strike, protesting everything. Weapons research on campus, the draft, the war, all injustice. And I'm with them, but I really don't want things to get that ugly on my campus because I want to graduate. And the moral dilemmas facing my male classmates really blow my mind, whether to go to war, go to Canada, go to jail, go underground, join the National Guard, or become a true Quaker. And I feel guilty because I don't have a draft card. And I say, yes, burn draft cards, but not the library, because I want to get out of here. Well, my campus doesn't shut down, and I graduate on schedule. I take my my BA in architecture to New York City and become a fashion model. In June, Bobby Kennedy is assassinated. And after that, I don't want to hear about another assassination, another riot, another massacre. I tune all the bad stuff out. And then the riots in Chicago in August are difficult to ignore, but I manage. And come September, I don't have to go back to school for the first time since kindergarten. And I escape into the cult of beauty in the pages of Glamour magazine. At Christmas time, I board a crowded train heading home for the holidays, and a young man is coming down the aisle. He's on crutches with a cast on his leg, and there's one empty seat opposite me. He's wearing cords and jeans, looks like a college student, good looking. So I move my bags aside so he can get settled in, and then I point to his cast and say the first thing that comes into my head, skiing accident? And he says, no, wounded in Vietnam. He fills the vacuum with apologies. He apologizes for being a soldier. He apologizes for going to Vietnam. He apologizes for getting wounded. I think this is so wrong. Please, please stop apologizing. You're hurt. But my protests have no effect. And he gets quiet, I get quiet. The train starts moving. I stick my nose in the latest Vogue. And my mind is spinning, trying to figure out how to make this right. But then his stop comes, and he's getting up to leave, and I'm desperate to say something real and authentic, but I've got nothing. And so as he's walking away, I say, have a nice Christmas. I never came up with the right words a half hour later or a half a day later or even a half a lifetime later. The gulf between me and those who go to war just got wider. I remained a peacenik, but I always felt bad and wrong for shutting down and not being able to face anyone in uniform. But last November 10th, I was listening to a Veterans Day special on our public radio station, and I heard Betsy Mulligan Day, the director of the Jeanette Rankin Peace Center, and Dan Gallagher, our veterans advocate, discussing the long-lived animosity between peace activists and veterans. And Dan described just what it felt like to have people holding the peace sign, shouting hideous names at him when he came back from war. And Betsy says she was truly sorry that happened to him or any soldier. And they agreed that what they both really wanted most was peace, even as they disagreed on how to get there. And Dan invites Betsy to speak at the next day's veterans gathering. She accepts. And I think if they can do that, I can at least show up. And I don't know why, but I know I have to go there on the 11th day of the 11th month, in the 11th year, at the 11th hour. I was a mess when I placed that white carnation, but I was steady when I spoke into the microphone. This is for the young man on the train. I guess after having no words for so long, I needed a ceremony. And I wasn't immediately ready to join veterans for lunch at the Old Post. But it was a start. It was a start that got me to forgive myself for having no words. And it was a start that got me here to tell you something.
Christy Hager received a Bachelor of Arts in Architecture from the University of Pennsylvania and a Master of Fine Arts from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She has taught printmaking, painting, and photography at the University of Montana, California State University Sacramento, Santa Clara University, and the University of Texas San Antonio. She has received fellowships from the Montana Arts Council and the National Endowment for the Arts and a Gottlieb Foundation Individual Artist Support Grant. Her works are in the permanent collection of the Missoula Art Museum, Yellowstone Art Center in Billings, Federal Reserve Banks of Minneapolis in Helena and Minneapolis, and the McNay Art Museum in San Antonio. Learn more about Christy and her art at christyhager.com. Next, Joshua Dadon shares an adventure that includes strippers. His story was recorded in front of a live audience at the Top Hat Lounge in Missoula. The theme for the night was perception. Joshua recounts piling into a Jeep Grand Cherokee with six of his friends for a road trip to Teasers, a strip club in Three Forks. The story gets interesting on the way home when the sheriff's deputy pulls them over. He calls his story Three Forks and or Busts.
So about 3 years ago, I was working a shitty office job. It was a Thursday night in July. I get off work, get home, and the bros at home tell me we're taking the kids next door out to a strip club because they had just graduated. By kids, I mean 18-year-olds. One was renting the upstairs and his three buddies just slept on the floor. So we pile into my buddy's Jeep Grand Cherokee. Seven people into this. Four in the back seat, two in the passenger seat, and one guy in the trunk. We head off. Tom tells me, we're heading to a place called Teasers. I have no idea where this is. I just moved to Missoula about 3 months before. He tells me it's about an hour and a half, 2 hours away. So I'm like, cool. They ask me to drive because both of my roommates had been getting their day drunk on. So we head out and we get on 90 and get off on 12 and go through Helena because this is the only way that Tom knew how to get there. And we continue along our way and get back on 90 and we start making fun of him for his piss poor, sense of direction. A quick Google search would have told us that there were not one, but two strip clubs within the vicinity of Missoula, and we could have bypassed this entire story. It was superfluous. So we get there, we walk in the door, and we get past the bouncers, except Tom can't get in because he forgot his ID all the way back in Missoula. They even let in the underage guys, but not Tom. So he goes back out to the car to wait for us. And let me set the stage. So we walk in. This is about the seediest joint you can imagine. Low, dim lighting, about a dozen rednecks, and five or six scantily clad women walking around. And we're all wearing matching soccer jerseys from a now-defunct soccer team and matching suit jackets. Two ladies walk over and you know, ask us what we're doing there, and we tell us, well, you know, we took out these guys because they just graduated high school. And these two very generous ladies take them back into the VIP room and give them dances. So, you know, we're just like hanging out. I have, you know, we have a couple beers or whatever. But then I find out I'm the only one with any money whatsoever. And this other lady walks over, you know, tall, slim, gorgeous, black hair, blue eyes. Her name is Sapphire. And she starts, you know, asking me if I want to dance or stuff like that, but I'm just super, super awkward. And I don't even, like, know what to say, but it turns out it's her turn to get up on stage and start dancing. So she goes out, and the other guys come back, and they're all, like, goofy, big goofy smiles on their faces, and they're like, that was the coolest thing ever. And so Sapphire gets done off the stage, and she wanders back over, and I relent and go off for a dance, and we're back there, and I've never been to a strip club before, so this was a first for me, as well as these guys that we had taken out. So I don't know what to do. And we end up making small talk about our hobbies and our likes and interests. And it turns out, like, she likes hiking and rafting and all kinds of outdoorsy stuff. So we start talking about that. And it's, you know, it's pretty cool. Like, she tells me she takes out her daughter and stuff like that. So I'm like, this is really cool. And she also makes, like, money off of, like, other things besides dancing, which, you know, she told me she does well. She's good at it, or she's like, she's good looking enough for it, and why not? She's not ashamed of her body. That's great. And she also makes hobby offer this other thing that I forget what it is, but it's like jewelry making or metalworking, gun running, something like that. And it was kind of like a moment where my whole perception of who strippers were, I never met one before. It's like, it was a very humanizing moment to find out, like, she's just another regular person. And that sounds completely sexist of me. But we get out of the room, and, like, we're just, like, making small talk, and come out to find out the rest of my boys are getting the hairy eyeball from the bouncers, because none of them have any money. They're not tipping any of the girls. And we've decided it's about a high time to clear out. And I give my regards to Sapphire, and then we're out the door. And so we get out to the Jeep, and then we find Tom is like two sheets out of three sheets to the wind. He had gone off while we were inside and went and found a couple 40s and had drank one and was halfway through the other. And it had only been like an hour and a half. So I'm exhausted, so I'd tell Aaron to drive. Since it's his car, he should be driving anyway. And we head on the road, and I pass out immediately. I'd been up all day. I'd been working, just got off of work. And it's, I don't know what time it is by now, but I fall asleep. Next thing I know, we're not moving. He's telling me to be cool, and I see some red and blue lights flashing. And he rolls down his window to talk to the police officer. Another walks up to my door. I'm sitting in the passenger seat. And he just opens my door and asks me to step out. And having just woken up, I blearily comply. Bad idea. And I step out and I hear tink. and I look down between my feet and the feet of the sheriff's deputy facing me, and I see a glass bowl. And I look up into his eyes and completely sincerely go, "That's not mine." Aaron had never cleaned out his car. So it's like straight into handcuffs, sitting in the ditch, and he tells everybody out. So the driver and myself in the passenger seat and the four kids, 18-year-old, whatever, sitting in the back seat get out, and they start searching the car, find two ancient, like couple-year-old beer bottles under Aaron's back seat, and decide to keep searching it for anything else that they could find. So like, we found a gold mine here. And they open up the trunk of the Jeep Grand Cherokee and find Tom hiding under some blankets because he just decided to lay there, and he's cradling like a mostly empty 40, and they find another empty 40 next to him. And they go, "You know, next time we search a car and you've got somebody in the trunk, you might want to let us know first." So Aaron, and it turns out what we got pulled over for was a broken taillight, and Aaron was speeding. Simple things. But the county we're in, Boulder County, occupies in their jurisdiction about a 6-mile stretch of the interstate. And that is used primarily for drug trafficking between Seattle, Portland area, and like God knows wherever else. And they milk that for all it's worth. Anybody who's ever speeding or anything, and every time I've driven through there since then, I always see somebody there. I always see a cop car just waiting on the side of the road, just waiting to pick somebody up. So they get him for a bunch of stuff, and he won't own up to the paraphernalia. So I end up getting charged for that. They take us off to the county seat, which is Boulder, and take us to the lockup, do the booking, the printing, the mugshot, the strip search, everything but the delousing. Pretty much the whole nine yards. And we end up spending the night there, and nobody ever came to pick us up, which also broke my perception of my bros, my guys, and the guy who wouldn't own up to the paraphernalia within his car, even though he's getting charged himself, which was his. And the guy who wouldn't, even though they sent him back with the other guys, having no license, and there was no insurance or registration for the car, they sent him back in the Jeep Grand Cherokee back to Missoula. Right? And I used my one phone call, by the way, to call out sick from work on Friday morning. The rest of it is a whole nother odyssey involving hitchhiking to Helena, trying to find a bus to get to back to Missoula, and going through Butte, and also involves people's perceptions of librarians as being old curmudgeon-y ladies, which in Helena, if you have ever been there to the library, you know they are. And also, there was a guy on mushrooms, and then an ex-con paying all his debts to society. But that's a whole nother story. But that's my perception of strippers and my bros, and the first time and last time I'd been arrested and been to a strip club. Thank you.
Joshua Dadone is a natural-born mountain man by way of Jersey with a preternatural love of escapism. You're listening to Tell Us Something Radio. I'm Mark Moss, creator of Tell Us Something, a series of events in which people share their true personal stories in front of a live audience.